our weekly look at Friday protests throughout the Arab world continues today with an examination of what's happening in Jordan, where a reform movement is posing a significant challenge to the rule of King Abdullah II. Joining us now is Christoph Wilke, senior researcher in the Middle East and North Africa Division of Human Rights Watch. Welcome to our show.
Hello and good afternoon to you.
Yesterday, a man set himself on fire in front of the Jordanian Prime Minister's office. Wasn't this whole wave of protests throughout the Middle East and North Africa started when a man put himself on fire in Tunisia?
It's right that that's how it started in Tunisia. I think as we look around the region, though, we find that there have been pots of unrest boiling for some time, even before the events in Tunisia. And the same, I think, can be said for Jordan.
But it would suggest that the situation in Jordan is getting a lot tenser and more serious.
Well, certainly a more symbolic outpouring of unrest, yes. And I think that may have been partly due to what happened a few Fridays ago on March 25th, where really for the first time there was widespread violence against peaceful protesters in Jordan. There was one incident in February that was a minor incident, and the police did respond. But on March 25th, over 100 persons were injured, including many police officers, and one person unfortunately died when a bunch of thugs broke the police rink around the protesters, and then the police joined the thugs in beating up the protesters and dispersing them from a place in Amman.
Well, all of those reactions by the government in defense of itself, where people die, seem to exacerbate the situations. A government's not learning from what they're seeing in other countries?
Well, indeed, one could write a notebook of what not to do in response to peaceful protests in the Middle East after, 3 months of this now. But I think Jordan has reacted somewhat differently from its neighbors in the region. Especially King Abdullah has tried to preempt any kind of unrest and serious opposition, I think, by in early February, on the 1st of February, dismissing his prime minister, who was just put in place 3 months earlier after national elections. And again, on March 22nd, only about 6 weeks, 7 weeks into the new prime minister's term, he issued a very stern letter to him saying, reforms are not going fast enough. There are a number of reforms that I want. So that's what King Abdullah has been trying to do, to get ahead of the reform movement. And it is, in a way, not clear who is sort of holding up these reforms. Is it the parliament, which is very unrepresentative? Or is it the government still composed of old timers, is the king not serious about his reform demands? Because at the same time, we hear of increasing harassment of journalists. We hear about increasing tribal tensions in what is, in some aspects, a very tribal country.
Well, the prime minister that he put into place after he sacked the previous one is Maruf Bakhit. But he's hardly new, held the same position from 2005 to 2007. Does he have a reputation as a reformer? Wasn't he alleged to have rigged elections in the past?
Well, our position is that he has not a very good record on reform. But what he was respected for from Jordanians I speak to, and perhaps the reason why I was chosen, was that he could get things done. And maybe the political will was out of his hands at the time. Now, if you look at his record, though, it is true that he presided over elections that were widely held to be the most fraudulent in Jordan's history. He has also not advanced political and civil rights at all, even though that was on his agenda at the time.
Well, he also oversaw the implementation of the peace treaty that Jordan signed with Israel in 1994, which would suggest that he can get things done. But should we also see this selection as a message to the West that they should not be afraid about the result of these uprisings in relation to Israel?
Well, it's always interesting to discuss about the messages being sent in the selection of key personalities. I think, as you say, Maruf al-Bakhit has a history as a prime minister. He was put in place right after the terrorist bombings in Amman in November 2005 that killed around 60 people, and for which Abu Musab al-Zarqawi later took responsibility. And he's known as a military man. I think the message was to the Jordanian population saying, here comes a military man, an East Jordanian. Let's not forget that there's a big divide in Jordan between those who come from what is today Jordan and those who come from the West Bank or the Palestinian areas of what used to at one point be Jordan. So this was a message that I'm appealing to my core constituency here, the East Bank military people in the security services and government services.
Is the list of grievances of the protesters similar to what we've heard in other parts of the region? High prices, corruption, civil liberties?
Yes, I think that spans the broad spectrum of demands. But Jordan is a monarchy, like Bahrain, one of the few monarchies that have seen serious protests right now. So one of the key demands in Jordan, as in Bahrain, although the scale of protests is different, is for a constitutional monarchy. Of course, Jordan is a constitutional monarchy in the sense that it has a constitution. But the powers that the king has right now are extremely vast. For example, the king can dissolve parliament at any time. He has done so. The latest time was actually just a couple of years ago because he was dissatisfied with the parliamentarian's performance. It is also the king who appoints the prime minister, and it's an open secret that the king and the intelligence services have, if not only a hand, but probably a key role in selecting anybody from judges to ministers.
Isn't it illegal to criticize the royal family?
It is illegal to insult them, and it is an insult that can land you in jail. It is not an insult where if the king so thinks, he may take you to court to sue for damages. It's not a civil offense. It is a criminal insult, again, as in almost all parts of the region. But it's one that prosecutors in Jordan have used, and apparently to the great distress of the king, who would say, well, I can handle a few criticisms of my personality, of my family, or of my position as king. However, prosecutors are very keen on putting these people away, and it's hit a number of students, especially in the new age, who've posted things on Facebook and in blogs that the intelligence services found out about, and that led to a prosecution, and some of them have been convicted.
What happened in February when the heads of 36 tribes in Jordan publicly accused Queen Rania of corruption and called on King Abdullah to remove her completely from the country's politics?
Well, the group of 36 of so-called East Bank tribal sheikhs is interesting because it has become clear now that although there's a historic divide between Jordanian origin Palestinians and East Bank origin Jordanians and East Bank origin Jordanians, that as in other places of the region, there's a new generation that thinks differently and that doesn't hold necessarily these old rivalries, that a new generation that can coalesce around demands for increased political liberty. And these 36 tribal East Bank figures have put forward demands and recommendations for political change that are very much the same that we would see from the much more liberal, generally Palestinian origin wing of Jordanian politics. The Muslim Brotherhood, for example, has a very large part of its membership among Palestinian origin Jordanians, and they have for a long time demanded much more open, fair elections and many more powers for the elected parliament. So these are now new coalitions that come together. The Muslim Brotherhood is coalescing with very small, admittedly, but strong in their public voice, leftist parties to also push these demands. So we'll see who comes together in a big, broad arena and coalition of opposition demands. That has not yet happened. The government has put in place a national dialogue committee, let's say, but they're only discussing really two issues, the election law and the political parties law, and it's not enough for a national dialogue on how to move the country forward.
So what is the most important factor to watch when we're discussing the situation there? Is it the role of Islamists, the role of the various tribes, or the role of the left and right parties?
I think that if you look at the Jordanian protests so far, the number of protesters have been relatively small. So one thing to watch out for is if an and when that number gets large. That would mean that somebody has hit a chord among a much larger and maybe hitherto unpoliticized element of Jordanian society, or even an element of Jordanian society that believed itself to be loyal to the king and the monarchy and the system, and therefore saw no need to demonstrate. So if we see those coming out in large numbers, then I think we are in a different kind of era. The other one, as I said, will be if we see really a broad coalition coming together. There have been ad hoc little coalitions around some Friday demonstrations in particular, but you have, for example, south of Amman, about 50 kilometers, an East Jordanian demonstrating against land grabs, the privatization of government land. That's his issue. You have in the Ruhr Valley dividing Israel and Jordan, or the Palestinian West Bank and Jordan. You have farmers throwing tomatoes on the streets because they want higher tomato prices. Now, they've achieved some of their aims because now, as of a few days ago, Jordan can export its tomatoes to Saudi Arabia. You have tribes, East Jordanian tribes in the north of the country demonstrating over various also usually land issues against the king. And let's not forget the two people were killed allegedly by the royal guard. That was, I think, in early February. But they managed to mediate and solve that district. So you have all kinds of various groupings in the country demonstrating, but they haven't yet all come together around one agenda.
Christoph Wilke is senior researcher in the Middle East and North Africa Division of Human Rights Watch. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Leonard.